Okay, thank you. I have two quick announcements. First of all, I was incorrect about the web access. You have to be a Penn student. I told you you had to pay the tuition to get it. I knew that would... Now it's back. And one final thing, those with blue dots on their badges, I welcome you, especially blue dot badge people, are new to ARS conferences. And I ask all us old timers to introduce yourselves and get to know each other. Now it's my pleasure to bring up Pete Kiefer from the Fred Waring Archive at Penn State University, and to share some of the treasures they have of Pennsylvania. We're broadening our Philadelphia to Pennsylvania, and thanks here.
Thank you, Sam. Speaking of the tower and the original four nippers that were in the tower, I guess somewhere around 1969 or something like that, when GE took over, RCA decided to change the logo, they took those four windows out. And I am very proud to say that Penn State has one of those windows. The other one is at Widmer College, another one at Smithsonian, and the other one is at the New Jersey Historical Society or something like that. And we are trying to find a place at Penn State. It's been sitting in a basement for all these years, trying to get it visible. I guess Sam and his programming, nice segue from the Johnson and the Victor Company to Fred Waring and the Pennsylvanians, because he was one of their big artists in the 20s over across the river here in Camden. The gentleman, Fred Waring, was a very unique individual, I think, in the entertainment business because he was successful in so many different fields. It was actually almost seven fields rather than just one or two or three or four that most of your artists are successful in. He made his mark in vaudeville as one of the top attractions in the vaudeville circuits in the early 20s and 30s. He made one of the first all-talking, all-musical movies, Syncopation, and later on made a movie called Varsity Show, which we'll see in a second. He was one of the early jazz recordings. It started in 1923 with the Victor Talking Machine. Went on to Decca and Capitol and Reprise. He also was very successful in radio, started in 1933 with the Old Gold Show, then the Ford Show, and then the Chesterfield Show in the 40s, and then on to television in the 50s through into the 60s. After that, he was one of the top attractions on the concert stage fields for the next 20 or 30 years. And in music education, he was one of the first to do music workshops where professional people taught the non-professional all the secrets of their so-called of their trade. And then, of course, in manufacturing. I'm sure you all have a Waring blender at home, and he was the Waring that brought it out, as they say. The band, it all started in 1918, four kids from Tyrone, Fred on the banjo, neighbor kid, Freddie Buck on the banjo, his brother Tom on the piano, and Polly McClintock started a four-piece band. And it became more and more popular to the point where Fred, who was at Penn State studying mechanical engineering, had to decide whether he was going to continue his degree or go into the band business. He decided to go into the band business. They went out to the University of Michigan and played what they called the J-Hop. And they were the overflow band. They had two big 21 and 26 piece orchestras alternating in the big gym. They were in a small room, probably very much similar to that as the overflow, and it wasn't long before all of a sudden everybody was trying to get into this little room to catch this this band of collegians with their razzle-dazzle, fast-paced visual shows. They started recording in 1923. At the same time, they also were one of the attractions at the opening of Grauman's Metropolitan Theater in California. The recording Sleep was issued first in Baltimore and supposedly sold 60,000 copies the first day. The total, I guess in today's world, Sleep would have been a million seller very shortly. This was made over in Camden, and here's sort of an edited version of the Sleep. A Philadelphia connection to that song is the original composition was called Visions of Sleep, written by a blind organist from Philadelphia by the name of Adam Geibel. And the first part of the piano composition is what attracted Fred and his brother Tom, and they used that as the theme song. To get permission from Adam Geibel to use the song and recorded it, they had to promise to use a fictitious name. So if you'll see, Liburg is Geibel spelled backwards. And even though now in the industry it's common knowledge when you apply for a mechanical royalty from Harry Fox Agency for Sleep, they still list Earl Liebig as the composer. I don't know if the Liebig estate is getting any royalties or not. Anyway, the group was traded on its young appearance. They were billed as all college graduates, stretch, and but they dressed. This was some of the costumes that they had. They went out to California. They were hired to perform what they called the prologue to the freshman movie, a silent film made by Harold Lloyd. They went around the country with the movie, doing the stage show in between showings. And that contributed a big part to their ensuing popularity. Along this line in 1925, when an electronic recording came in across the river, they were one of the first pop groups to do an electronic recording, and appropriately, the song was Collegiate. Thank you. I always have to smile on that little section. That's a little bit of a Penn State fight song in there. When they were in Hollywood, they were hobnobbing with all kinds of people, and here's a picture of them with Douglas Fairbanks Sr. And apparently he also was posed for pictures supposedly playing the tuba. I don't know if he did or not. Anyway, they were trading on the college thing, and an interesting thing, most of these dubs are from what they called test pressings, that were sent to Fred to approve before they released the record. And one thing when we were putting these on to digital, I noticed that all of a sudden we had a group of five or six recordings that was done in 1925 instead of Camden out in Los Angeles. And you can tell, obviously, the room was different, as you can hear, and this freshy. Obviously, a bigger room, natural reverberation, I guess. By 1926, they were probably the top-paid popular band in vaudeville, pulling down an amazing $27.50 a week, which doesn't sound like much to us, but in 1926, that was pretty good. That was a full-page ad in Variety. For those of you that may not be aware, back in those days, the week before Easter, Holy Week, was sort of the no-no week of all the year for performances. That theaters and auditoriums and houses, sort of the attendance dropped. And when they were down in the Stanley Theater, obviously, the attendance did not drop. And they said it was more of Waring's Pennsylvanians than it was the movie. But they were one of the top groups at that time. And they did a lot of corn once in a while. I had a researcher doing an article on Spike Jones one time, and she called up and wanted to know if I had any material letters or things between Fred and Spike Jones, because Spike Jones had said he was inspired by the King of Corn, Fred Waring, and that really took me back for a little bit. But then when I got into the radio programs and realized every radio program had more than its share of corn, and here's one of them. Any ice today, lady? Recorded across the creek. Thank you. One of the performers, Mr. Waring, and it's too far down in the record to get to, was Polly McClinic, who was famous for his frog voice, "Eddie Ice Today, Lady," which was the inspiration for the voice of Popeye in the cartoons. In fact, the producer of the Popeye cartoons tried to hire Polly away from Fred, and Polly used that device to say, "Well, I'm going to go out and make movies unless you give me more money." And I guess Fred gave more money because he stayed, but he was the inspiration for the Popeye. The group became international, so to speak, when it went to Paris in 1928, and they played the Supper Club Des Ambassadeurs and did shows that a lot of the music was written by Cole Porter. George Gershwin appeared with them, played the Rhapsody in Blue with them. His sister, Frances, was also part of the club, and so was another name, Clifton Webb. They would have toured Europe, but they were called back to the United States to be in a Broadway show called Hello Yourself. Again, a college kind of atmosphere show. And while they were doing Hello Yourself, in between performances, they would go across the street to Brooklyn and film the movie Syncopation. It was one of the early ones. Unfortunately, Al Jolson's picture got released first, so that got all the claim as the first all musical, all talking movie, but Syncopation was close on its heels. What was different about this band and other bands of the era was the fact that it was a singing band. Singing was a very important part of the group, not just a vocal chorus every now and then or a solo. Singing was all part of it. They were a show band. They did a lot of he was one of the first to use risers to get them off the floor and put them in different kinds of positions. And they used a lot of visual effects. And I have a video here from Syncopation. The hit song out of there was Jericho, and it'll show you a little bit of what they looked like back in 1928. You will see that the band, besides having to play instruments and besides having to know how to sing, they also had to do choreography. Thank you. I'm not have a lot of experience with old movies, but I thought the sound in that pickup was remarkable for 1928. That's right off the movie. That's not enhanced. The group went on in 1930 to be part of Cole Porter's The New Yorkers that had its previews here in Philadelphia to rave reviews, and then went up to the Broadway Theater in New York. And one of the songs from there was written specifically for a group that Fred had with him at the time called the Three, well, originally they were called the Three Girlfriends, and then later on they found that somebody else owned that name, they became the Three Wearing Girls. But at the time, they were the Three Girlfriends, and it was one of the first songs, not the only song, I think, that Fred recorded that probably didn't get the radio play that it wanted because it was banned in Boston and other places. Love for Sale. The three ladies were June Schaefer, Ida Pearson, who later married one of Fred's piano players, and Stella Friend, who after the girls left the group, came back later years with a group called Stella and the Fellas. In 1932, the Warings Pennsylvanians went from about 23 or 24 people to 55 when they were engaged to appear at the Roxy Theater. Fred had to expand the band. It was also his first time he had to really conduct classically trained musicians, and he had to learn a few things about conducting also. They were originally booked for, a 4 or 5 week run, ended up staying 6 months. They played, six shows a day with this, starting at 11 o'clock in the morning, ending somewhere around midnight. You know, you thought the musician's life today is bad? It also pointed up a time when, that's nice. It also was marked the end of Fred's recording with Decca, or with Victor. He was having an ongoing battle. Jukeboxes were coming out, and radio stations were using records for local programs with commercial sponsors, and he and several other musicians felt like they should get some kind of compensation for the use of all their recordings, and was not making very good headway, so he said, I'm going to quit recording. And after 1932, he stopped and didn't resume until 1942 with Decca. But radio was on the horizon, The group, Waring group, went on the on radio CBS for Old Gold. Did you love that propaganda there that we were getting in those days? This was a window advertisement of the group in Old Gold. They had a half-hour show, or an hour show, came out of Carnegie Hall once a week, and Milton Berle made his radio debut on the show, and Harry Richman was also a frequent guest. He was the baritone balladeer of the time. I don't know necessarily why the contract only went an hour, or I mean a year, but the following year, the group went on the air for the Ford Dealers of America for a nice little 3.5-year run. The Ford Dealer program brought a lot of innovations. Fred, of course, traded on the fact that his programs were variety, all kinds of different kinds of music in different settings, and he brought in a lot of different singing groups at the time, or ensembles, besides the Glee Club, which was the orchestra that put down their instruments and sang. Here's an opening of the Ford show, and one of the group within the group called the V8, singing Sing, Sing, Sing. This group was actually two out-of-work quartets that got together and formed. They were rehearsing at the Irving Berlin Studios, and one of Fred's arrangers came through and said, why don't you guys combine, and I think maybe Waring could juju. The front row was B. Wayne, B. and the Bachelors, Ken Lane, who became Dean Martin's accompanist, and Al Rinker, one of the Rhythm Boys, and Johnny Medsworth. And the four guys in the back, anybody know who they are? How astute are you? They later became, pardon? The Modern Heirs. They went on, of course, to fame with the Glenn Miller Orchestra. Another one of the vocal groups was Stella and the Fellas. Stella's back again. And the gentleman at the piano, those of you who were here last year, that was Roy Ringwald, who became one of the most outstanding choral arrangers ever. And then in addition to that, we had the first girls' choir ever on radio, Kay Thompson and her girls' choir, and they were featured two or three times a year. And then I guess the two dominant personalities clashed, and she went on her way, wrote Eloise. Other featured performers was a guy named Johnny Scat Davis. This is one of his big numbers in that time, called The Sheik.
Guess who you be?
Guess who I be?
Guess who you be?
Well, my, I'm the sheik of ever be. Your love belongs to me. And at night, when you're asleep, into your little tent I'll creep. And the stars that shine up above light our way to love. You'll rule this land with me. I'm the sheik of Arabia.
I'm the Shaky Man, that's all I am. Sleep all the way from Alabama. From coast to Dallas know me. But here's what got him in Tennessee.
Also featured were two young ladies, Rosemary and Priscilla Lane, who were on the Ford shows. And then Fred went to Hollywood again to do Varsity Show, which featured Johnny Scott Davis and the Lane sisters and the whole Waring organization. Also an upcoming baritone, romantic baritone by the name of Dick Powell. And Sterling Holloway is in the group over there. It was also a role, Ted Healy. You movie fans probably recognize some of those people. Anyway, the while they were in Varsity Showcase, you want to play cut number 9 underneath me? While they were there filming the movie, it was done on Pomona College.
What do you mean by singing?
Well, let's listen to this a little bit. This is the one of the opening scenes of the movie.
And sing.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. We're working our way through college to get a lot of knowledge that we'll probably never, ever use again. It's swell to tell what parallel and parallax is, but after graduation, will it pay our taxes? The study of economics will never fill our stomachs if we finally have to be insurance men. It's a cinch to cram for each exam and make yourself a scholar. But when you go in business, can you make yourself a dollar? Hooray for history and Greek and algebra. We're working our way through college with the rah, 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 rah.
Incidentally, we found in the Waring collection supposedly the discs that they cut and used for the actual filming. You know, they sing along while they're doing the filming. So we've got those transferred on a CD. Any collectors are interested, we got it. While he was there at Pomona College, he saw one night that the Glee Club, Pomona College Glee Club, was doing a concert, so he, naturally interested in choral music, went, and was very impressed with the young man that was conducting it. Turned out he was a student filling in for the director who was on a semester's absence due to some illness. He offered the young man a job, which he turned down at first because he was going to become a minister, but then money got tight, so he called Fred Waring and says, the offer still stand? And he said, yes, come to New York and help me form my first professionally trained glee club, and that gentleman was Robert Shaw. And he stayed with Fred for 6 years, and Fred helped him start the Collegiate Chorale, and then that led Bob to doing that. In 1938 to 1944, the group went on what some people call the golden age of choral music. Every day, 5 days a week, 52 weeks out of the year, for the next 6 years, the Fred Waring show, the Chesterfield Pleasure Time, went on the air at 7 o'clock here in the East, where they did a 15-minute show and then did a 45-minute after show for the audience. Took a break, came back at 11 o'clock, did the same show for the West Coast, and did another 45-minute after show for the audience, the new audience, and I think turned into probably one of the most musical competent groups that have ever lived. It got to be almost 60 musicians, instrumentalists and singers, and their sound was a wonderful choral sound, and their versatility and their reading ability was fantastic. I don't know if I have time to show it all, but we have a video cut of the Chesterfield show. This was a film made in 1940, I guess by Chesterfield, as a promo film. Sort of, it's a 15-minute film, we won't watch it all, but this will give you an idea of the Fred Waring radio show. Here it comes.
Among the many reasons for Fred's popularity are his unique arrangements of modern popular ballads, featured by the Pennsylvanian's talented and attractive soloist, Donna Day. Example of the Pennsylvanian's versatility is a specialist in the field of vocal classics, Stuart Churchill, who is also one of the ablest instrumental musicians in the gang. Pennsylvanians' favorite assignments is the new college song they present every week. From old.
Okay, unknown. The fact that, and that's with left guitar and every Jim here's is the Les Paul. These are the three guys that came. We are going to 20. This is. Michael, you laughed at 2 minutes and 30 seconds. He had everything timed to the exact second. He only had 15 minutes. He tried to do, 30 songs in 15 minutes. And Les was telling me he was always got Fred's wrath because once Les started playing, he's in another world. He didn't pay attention to stop clocks or Fred's waving, cut it, or something. So often when you listen to these radio programs, you hear something else coming over the Les Paul Trio at the end or something like that. But anyway, the next thing that field that Fred went into after radio was television. He had an early adventure with television in 1939 when NBC had their experimental studio at the World's Fair. They were the music organization that did a 30-minute program on TV. But in 1949, they went on the air for CBS. They were on every Sunday at 9 o'clock following the Ed Sullivan Show. Not a bad opening act. And we're there until 1955 and 56 when he decided to go back on the road. Music education, as I said, he started one of the first choral workshops ever where the professional people taught the non-professional. Now you open up a music magazine in the summer and there's probably 350 workshops going on at the same time. He expanded the workshop to young singers and they were there for 2 weeks and learned to do a wearing show. That all continued until he died in 1984. Then he went back on the road, and this was from Hear Hear, which was a Broadway show, again featuring a variety of music for everybody and with choreography and visual effects. Along the way, He managed to develop the blender. He did not invent it. There was a gentleman that had the idea, had the patents, couldn't get a working model. And so he brought the idea to Fred, and Fred, with his money, his contacts, and a couple of suggestions, and then marketed the Waring blender. It's still being made today. And then it's interesting, they've gone from the multi-buttons, which Fred said was ridiculous, back to the original two-speeder. He also had a long association with the cartoonists. As he owned Shawnee Inn and Country Club up the road here at Shawnee, and entertained the National Cartoonist Society for 28 years. That's Milt Kniff, Ham Fisher, did Joe Palooka, and the inimitable Rube Goldberg. And they're awarding him the T-Square as an honorary award. They became a member. And consequently, we have over 565 pieces of original cartoon art in our Waring collection from the major cartoonists of the country. In 1983, he was awarded the Gold Medal of Congress, shown here, presented to him by Ronald Reagan, who not too many years before that was the host of the General Electric Theater, of which Fred Waring and the Pennsylvanians were a part of. So you want to do cut 14 in the background? The heritage that we are preserving up at Penn State, he commercially recorded 1,100 songs in 103 albums and innumerable singles. He did 2,650 radio broadcasts and 200 television shows. By actual count, between 1933, the first radio show, to the last television show in 55-56, there are 24,373 performances of songs, and they are all preserved on recordings. And so that's the heritage, and a lot of it started in, part of it started here in Philadelphia, and of course he carried the name of Pennsylvania all around the country for over 67 years. And as Fred used to say at the end of his concerts, thanks for coming.
Violin when he was 9 years old, couldn't stand the school orchestra, and his father said, either, play the orchestra or you stop taking violin, and he very willingly put the violin down and played the banjo, which he, after a few years, gave up for the baton.
Yes. How did his record sales compare with Paul White when they were both with
Decca? I think comparable. In fact, maybe by the time they got to Decca, Fred was running a little bit ahead of Paul, because he was newer and had different kind of music, obviously different kind of music. Paul Whiteman, by the way, was his idol. And in fact, the band, when they were in their infancy, went to New York and auditioned for Paul Whiteman. And they became lifelong friends. Fred, Paul used to go out and play golf with Shawnee. We have a lot of pictures of him on the golf course. Way back.
Nation, because that feature doesn't circulate at all, really. But I'm curious about why you picked that to show
historical thing, I guess. This shows the versatility out of play, put on gloves, do choreography, get them off and play again, kind of thing. You know, I could have picked those two. I thought about the drinking song, but we're at a college, you know. Yeah.
Peter, I couldn't tell because the lights were on and the clip was kind of hard to read, but did they put on large white gloves while they performed that bit in Jericho?
Mm-hmm. And then had to get them off real quick so they could play their instrument. Yeah, it was more than just playing an instrument in that group.
Were they archival gloves?
Kind of looks like them, you know.
Pete, thank you very much. Thanks to all the speakers this morning. We're going to break for 65 minutes, try to start as close to 1:30 as we can. I hope you know where the lunch opportunities are. There's something in the basement where you can get sandwiches and salads and pasta. As you go to, is it Chestnut Street or Walnut Street? There are a number of other... in the program books. So follow the other hungry... And Steve, I'll get you. Yeah, and Steve, we'll talk about the walking tours a little later.